Hey, before we start this episode, just want to remind you that the Fearless Woman's Guide to Starting a Business is available everywhere that you like to buy books, and you can get it in paperback, Kindle, and even as an audiobook. I'll have links on where you can purchase in the podcast notes. Okay, back onto the show.
You are listening to One Broken Mom, a podcast dedicated to raising awareness about mental health, parenting, and self-improvement. I'm the host, Ami Quirconi. One Broken Mom is not a family show. It is intended for adults only and may contain adult language. Sometimes the topics are serious, but you can count on the episodes to be entertaining. Also, One Broken Mom is not offering any psychiatric or medical diagnosis. We're just here giving away useful and important information. So, if you're ready to hear real talk by real people so that we can all get better together, then you're in the right place, and welcome.
Okay, everybody, welcome back to One Broken Mom. this is literally take seven, I think, at this point. Today's guest, I'm just going to skip the whole introduction that I had before.
Shit show.
This is a definition of a shit show. I have with me this amazing woman that I can't wait for you all to hear and talk about. And I know this is probably like, what am I listening to right now? Because we're laughing already. So I'm just going to start here. We've had some internet connection issues. And I even talked about how if I didn't get this done right at the beginning, that I was prone to accidentally not record any of this. So we got ourselves settled down. We got in a good position. The internet connection's happening. We're going to make this happen. We've got the right setting. And then we get into the first question and I haven't hit the record button. So I had this really nicely written up intro that I don't even care about anymore. We're just going to get right to to hearing about this. But Lacey is a business owner up in the Snohomish area that we actually, a friend of mine introduced me to her back in January and said, you got to check this woman out. Her story's amazing. She's funny. The products are cool. And I was going to do that. And then the universe kind of pushed that along because we all ended up on a Zoom call with a bunch of other activist citizens in our community in the wake of the George Floyd murder. And we were going to be doing a joint message that we wanted to send out. And she published it and I wrote it and another person came up with a lot of the concepts in it. And given the fact that when the universe puts somebody in your path more than one time, you know, I listen to the universe when the universe speaks. And so it was telling me that, you know, now's a great time to not only meet another amazing, you know, woman entrepreneur, but to talk about the reason why she exists and why this business came together and why it, you know, the listeners and the viewers of One Broken Mom, why you guys deserve to hear what she has to say, because it's pretty powerful. And I hope to God that that's the last time I have to say that and I don't have to do this introduction again.
Okay, I'm not touching my keyboard. We have confirmed we're recording. I think we're good.
I think we're good. Okay, so welcome again.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm just thrilled to be here. I can't get enough of your content. So this is such an honor. So thank you for having me on your show.
So thank you for being patient because I'm usually not a shit show like this, but I feel like maybe it's just
we're all a shit show.
Right. So this is a perfect segue. Let's talk about Malicious Women Company. I want to start off by you describing this business that you have. That's pretty awesome.
Well, not to spoil the ending, but yeah, it all started with a shit show. I talk about this and I firmly believe this and it's stunning to me how we're here, but I never intended to start a business. I never meant to start a business. I worked at Boeing for 22 years. I was a quality engineer, had my career set. I was solid. And life was good. Like I had nothing to worry about. And then 2016 happened and my whole world collapsed. My sister, who is 1 year and 1 day older than me, my closest sister, riding down the road and got hit by a farm truck on her motorcycle and broke damn near every bone in her body and was airlifted to Harborview down in downtown Seattle. And then my father, who was my mentor, and, you know, we talked briefly about that. I'm hyphenated. I was my dad's son. I grew up in the garage with my dad and learning how to weld. And 20s. Why I became an engineer and simply fell off the ladder one day, hit the back of his head, and suffered a traumatic TBI and was in a coma for months, still recovering. That's a whole nother show. Then my daughter, who was active duty Navy at the time, was hospitalized in Oak Harbor at the Navy base. So I was spending my days kind of in this triangular motion, working my day job, taking care of, you know, getting to the hospital with my mom, my sister, my daughter, and it was just all of this craziness. And but I was going, I was doing it. And then my dearest friend, Laura, the inspiration for all of this, we had been friends for over 20 massive years, just many years, and met when we were 19. And we were heart friends. We thought that that was more than best friends. It was heart friends. And talked, texted every day. No matter where we were in the world, we would, no matter what, we would talk, text every day. And she'd always suffered with mental health. And that's always been something that was completely okay to talk about. If she was having a dark day, if she was having a couch day, if she was having a great day, we would discuss all of those things. And there was never even any shame because that's what your heart friend is for. But in August and September, October, she started getting back down. There's a lot of external things that contributed to that. But she was back in her dark place and she made an attempt, and I flew to Germany the next day. I hopped on a plane, went right to Germany. I spent a week with her in a German public mental health hospital. If you've never had the opportunity to spend a week in a German public mental health facility, that makes me appreciate the United States a little bit more for what we have. And then she was fine, working, getting back on her meds. And then, of course, December 10th, she took her own life. And that was when I broke. I remember I was heading to a meeting that Friday. And then, when you're trying to support somebody who is just suffering, and it's really difficult if you're, you know, knowing how to do that right. Okay, I think everybody expects us to know how to be the best friend and how to support somebody, but it's not linear. It's up and it's down, and I had a meeting and I couldn't take that call, and I silenced it. And then I meant to call her back and I didn't, and texted. And by the time, you know, she had committed suicide. So that text is still unanswered. And that's what broke me. I broke. And I couldn't get off the couch. And I was laying on the couch and I was drinking wine from the bottle and eating boxes of Captain Crunch and just wallowing in all of it. And the grief of my friend and the guilt of that. And it was bad. I was put on a leave of absence from work. I didn't ask for one. I was put on one. Big difference there. And I just, it was the first time that I had ever felt that darkness that Laura was battling every day. That, how do I go on? How do I live with this? How do I live without the most important people in my life? Just right. So then my husband said, "Hey, you haven't showered in like a week. And I was just wondering if maybe you'd be open to some therapy." And fuck therapy. I don't need therapy. Everything's crap. Right. I super needed therapy. So I went to a therapist, and my therapist really encouraged me to try to find something to do. You know, get off the couch. So I said, you know, I was a candle person. I liked candles. I never made one, but I thought, well, I'll make a candle for Laura, honor her, and light it when I feel sad. That's what I'll do. And so my husband got me this candle making kit off of Amazon and set it up at the kitchen counter, and I'm off. I had showered that day, right? I'm up at the kitchen counter, we're pouring candles, and then I was like, these aren't good enough. Nope. So we ordered another kit, and I kept going and going, and then that engineer brain kicked in, right? Because I had to make the perfect candle. So then after a good month, my entire house was just filled with candles, just test candles. I had test data sheets, right? I mean, I'm going full-blown functional test here. And my husband, God bless him, he's just, hey, hun, do you think it might be time to go back to therapy a little bit? So I go back and I said, I'm doing what you told me to do. And she's like, well, we think maybe you're obsessing a little bit now. So let's get to the actual problem, because I had just transferred it. I had gone from my grief, and I didn't have to think. I didn't have to feel when I was making candles. So my therapist said, I want you to host a party and celebrate life. And I said, fuck that. There is literally nothing to celebrate. Therapist said, I think you can. So then she challenged me, and I said, fine, I'll have a party, but it's going to be a shit show. And it was. So it took about 2 weeks to get this party together. I invited some of my circle of friends, and I said, hey, I'm going to have this party. It's going to be a shit show. Let's get together. Let's talk about our shit. Let's write our shit down. Let's set our shit on fire, and let's let this shit go. And I had so many candles around my house that I made up these little funny little labels. I said shit show infused with vanilla and chaos, right? Because that's just what my life felt like. And so we had the party, and it was great, and everybody talked about their shit. We did set our shit on fire, and then I gave out the shit show candles, and they're like, Lacey, you got to sell these. And I'm like, no one's going to buy a candle with the word shit on it ever. And so they posted on Facebook on this little garage sale site. And I sold like 27, my first like hour. It was like sold one, sold two, sold three. Little Snohomish County bestie site. And then I filled all those orders. And that's when I made the Bitches Get Shit Done candle. And I made this blend of a scent called the Hot Mess, and it's like this red hot cinnamon and this black tea and bergamot, and I called it a hot mess. So I did Bitches Get Shit Done infused with ambition and a hot mess, because that's kind of how I felt. And it's just kind of grown from that. Every time I feel an emotion or I see something that I need to therapy about, I put it on a candle, and people really respond to that. There's nothing off limits. Parenting, body shame, mom shame, divorce, anxiety, depression, all of that. Nothing is off limits, because that's the real stuff. And that's what I want to keep people talking about. So that's how I started my accidental candle company.
It sounds there's some familiarity. I mean, only in the sense that I have an engineering degree myself. And so when I started my first business, it was a manufacturing company. It was the same thing. Like, my house was inundated with samples. The garage I took over, there were spreadsheets everywhere, right? So I get the whole methodical, like, and the, need to do it that way. So I was laughing only in the sense of like, oh yeah, I've been there. I've had to have a husband ask me, like, what are you going to do with all of this? But the, to turn it around, I mean, I love the taking emotion and feeling and putting into something that you can kind of, it's tangible in a sense, and adding an aroma to it and words to it. I mean, obviously you have a sense of humor, which is great. So, having your sense of humor come out, in what you're doing is kind of interesting. Your take on therapy, I'd like to go back to that. So having a best friend, somebody more than that to you that had this lifelong, inner war with mental health conditions, you didn't ever, look at your own mental health? I mean, was everything just perfectly fine for you, and just therapy was for other people?
No, of course. Yeah. No, I have absolutely been in therapy off and on. For me though, I think the key takeaway, what I learned about that is that, or what I learned about myself was, I had never been in that level of darkness where therapy didn't seem like it could help, like nothing seemed like it could help. And that's the part that was really scary for me. And I think that was really scary for my husband, is that I have, you know, I've battled anxiety girl. Mine wears a cape. She's got a big A on her chest, right? Like, I know therapy, but this was such a level of deep darkness that I didn't see a way out. I didn't see how talking about my feelings was going to help the grief. I didn't see how it was going to bring my dad back. I didn't see how any of this was going to, right? And so that's where Joe, my husband, stepping in, saying, you know, being that push for me, saying, hey, let's get you back into therapy, even though I couldn't see outside the couch. Mm-hmm. If that makes any sense at all.
Absolutely. No, it totally does. So when we talk about Laura, you know, when we have people that are on the show that have been touched by suicide, either it's something that they have tried to do themselves, they've tried to die and kill themselves, or they've lived with somebody who has, or, you know, were a child or parent, you know, with somebody that's on there. You know, I always ask, what do you know about their experience, this person's experience, in their life? And, you know, the reason why I ask the question is because I wonder if there's something in Laura's journey that could be important for us to know, especially when we have people in our lives, because, you know, sometimes I hear kind of two things, like, I never saw it coming. And then you hear sometimes on the other side of the coin, like, you know, it was only a matter of time. And, you know, both of those are terrible, you know, conditions for anybody there. But is there something that you know from Laura and what her life had been like, and, you know, contributions maybe to this, this sense of herself that she had that, you know, that kind of led to her struggles? You know, I've talked with other suicide survivors that, you know, talk a lot about the abuse, you know, especially as children and stuff like that. And I don't know if there's anything like that about Laura that is worth and relevant and germane to our conversation that you can share, or would like to share.
There are a lot of contributing factors that, but that's Laura's story. And I would like to keep those private. But yes, Laura was the proudest mom you've ever met. Laura was, she loved to laugh. She loved to read. She loved words. And it just seemed like every time she turned around, life would just gut punch her. Mm-hmm. She would be coming up, and bam, coming up, you know, and over. And the most resilient woman I've ever met in my life, the bravest woman I've ever met in my life, and the strongest woman I've ever met in my life. And this is on top of, you know, what she was already battling. It was just, For her, I think that one too many, the last one was just one too many, and she could not recover from that. She had her world all built around a certain idea, and that whole idea was just ripped out from her with no warning. And so it just, she sunk. And she was open about it. And, you know, she'd say, Lacey, God, I know, but I just don't. She just couldn't imagine living. And it's strange and odd. But I think because we were so close, and because I understood her so well and she understood me so well, I think she knew that she could tell me that. And so I'm blessed with the fact that she was open with me. So it didn't come without warning. I was still very shocked. I guess in my mind, my denial thought, okay, well, this is gonna, if I'm a good enough friend, if I'm, you know, if I do enough things, if I'm, you know, check in every hour on the hour, then that's going to be enough. But in the end, no, it was her personal decision. And So I don't, there's, that's such a big question.
Oh, I know. I know. Yeah. And no, and like I, when you and I were talking, for everybody that's listening right now, you know, before I ask those questions with my guests, I usually talk to them first about it, so it doesn't come as any surprise, because I do, you know, this isn't about sensationalism. This isn't about terrible details. This is about us learning from these experiences, and sometimes knowing, sometimes there's something that's important to know. You know, hearing her resiliency, I think, is an important thing for people to hear, that you know, many types of people struggle with suicide ideation, the ones that look like have everything under control and the ones that don't. It doesn't come in a convenient, easy to identify, you know, label, package, look, feel, you know, whatever that is.
She tried so hard to live. She mm-hmm. tried. And her brain just wouldn't, and her heart, they didn't mesh. Mm-hmm. Sucks.
Yeah, it does. I've had people before mention to me their desire to die, and it just makes my body go cold instantly when I hear that. Like, holy shit, like, what am I supposed to do with that information? Like, what do I do? You know, and that sense of, like, it's the only times that I've ever felt powerless. You know, that there's a person you want in your life and you want them to live, and they tell you that they don't want that. And I know it's a sick feeling that I've had to deal with. You know, was that something that hearing her, it became easier for you, or did that just make you, you know, how did that make you feel when you knew that that was the case with her, and having, and being friends and supportive of that? I mean, I've talked with other people that spend many time, you know, years supporting another person that has that pervasive idea going on in there. I mean, how was it for you being a friend with somebody that you knew had these deep struggles? What did you do for you and, you know, to be that friend for her?
I think the important thing was I just listened. I just listened, and she had a place that it was okay to say it. Even though it was so difficult to hear it, and the fear was always underneath that there's going to be a day that I'm going to lose my friend. I'm going to lose her. And, but approaching that relationship with kindness and compassion, and knowing that her struggle is her struggle, and I'm here. No one else would allow her to talk about it. She'd try to go to the therapist and say that she's feeling suicidal, and they lock her up, you know, and I understand it's for her own protection, but she couldn't even have a thought without somebody jumping on her and telling her how wrong she was. Somebody telling her how she's going to just screw over everybody that she leaves behind. And to be that person to say, wow, Laura, I'm hearing exactly that's a shit day. Wow, that's a shit day. So what can we do? What can you do? What can we do to go one more? What can we do to go one more day? You know, and just, I always encouraged her to live. And but I didn't do it. So many people try manipulation, right? Like, remind her that she has a daughter. She freaking knows she has a daughter. It isn't about other people. It's about herself and her heart and what she felt that she could take, and the kind thing to do. Because Laura was the kindest person you've ever met in your life. The kind thing that I could do back to her was just listening. And at some point, knowing we gotta let her go, and that have her peace, mm-hmm. 'cause she wasn't at peace. Mm-hmm. And that's hard. That's mm-hmm. really hard, 'cause the selfish part of you wants to say, "I want you to be my friend forever. I want to grow old with you." And but that wasn't the kind thing for her, so.
How, knowing that, and we did talk about this, and when I read this, you know, your story, and seeing the unanswered text, I mean, just the fact that it's still left unanswered, like that's my response to that. I'm just gonna let out some air. You know, do you ever feel, I got to imagine, I put myself in your shoes, man, I would fucking feel like, what the hell, if I had done something different that day, if I had chosen to make the call. But how do we know, right? Like, how did you know that that was what the call was coming in there? But, you know, what have you had to process from knowing that that day, you know, was the day she reached out and you weren't available there? Like, you know, no fault of your own, but you weren't there.
Well, I'm going to be real honest with you here. I haven't really processed that yet. So that is what broke me. It was the guilt. That's why I couldn't get off the couch. But here we are 3 years later, and I just started therapy again, because I haven't. So I don't really have an answer for that, because I don't know. And I feel, you know, I don't want to be that person that, you know, that savior complex, right? That our relationship wasn't like that. I think she was more of a support for me than I ever was for her, right? And logic brain, right? My logical brain tells me that that text, that wasn't the end of our relationship. It was just the beginning of a different relationship, because I still talk to her every day. We have massive like I literally just had a conversation with her this morning, because something happened. I was like, oh God, this would be magic to know. Oh my God, this is crazy. So I don't know that I can answer how to deal with that, because I still haven't 3 years later. It flip-flops. It's one day, it's like there's nothing I can do about that. That was her day. That was the day she chose. She planned it. There was wine involved. She made herself an area. I mean, she put a lot of thought into it. She made a peaceful place to be at peace, if that makes any sense. So my heart breaks that she did that alone. She was, because I know in her mind, she was thinking of, you know, her daughter, her family, her grandchildren, me, you know, I know she was thinking of us. And I know that that had to be a horrific decision for her to make. But then the other side of me still thinks, what if I just answered? Why was that meeting so important? And I don't freaking know. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yep.
I hate it. So, yeah, I don't know.
No, so yeah, I don't think that's probably one of those things that you'll ever know, right? It seems like, you know, do you have to, right? It's kind of a strange thing, but do you have to know, you know, does it change anything with the knowing, right? She doesn't come back. Right.
I know that's the part I struggle with. Is logical brain and my heart, you know. It would be nice if those were more aligned, but that's just not how I'm built.
So, right.
Yeah. Right. She is here. I feel her all the time. All the time. Ugh, so, and yeah.
So. Well, so the name Malicious Women isn't by accident either. So that was a phrase that you guys
had. That was our
phrase. Yeah.
That was our thing, right? So we would call up each other, text or whatever, and be like, oh my God, you would not believe what that bitch did or said, or this guy at work or whatever, right? And then we would always like, you know, have a glass of wine and we'd be FaceTime or whatever and be like, oh my God, you know what we should have said? If only we were a little more malicious. So that, and then we would go in and we would like, say all these scenarios that would have been so amazing to say if it wouldn't have gotten you fired or kicked out of the PTA or whatever, right? And so when I made that shit show candle, I had to call it Malicious Women Co. because we were malicious women, you know, like that's what we did. And that font, that typeface, Laura knew every word you could possibly imagine. She was the most, like, I stopped playing Scrabble with her because I couldn't. I was like, yeah, well, I will math you up. Yeah. So, I mean, she was like, I could math, and she knew impossibly long words. And so, yeah, it everything about the jar, the label, the name, the mission, who we donate to, everything is to honor her, to honor Laura, and to honor that beautiful life that she did live. And that's what I'm just going to continue to do that, is just say the things that we never got to say. Say the things, you know, now I left my corporate job, I can say whatever the fuck I want now, right? And that's something I was never able to do when Laura was alive. So I think that's the biggest thing, is just being able to honor her through word, mm-hmm. and through a little bit of maliciousness. So
well, and you have such a strong following with the brand, you know, and again, for me working in the business field, and this coming about as quickly as it has, you know, you've obviously really connected. The candles are amazing, and I have one of the sweatshirts. But that's not alone what fuels a passion and a commitment and a following from people. And so I have to imagine that aside from the snarky labels and the funny sayings, that you're connecting with everybody and a lot of women in this very same way that are drawn to, you know, this integrity. And I use the word integrity because being able to see and be your own person and who is the most authentic version of who you are is living with integrity. Even if that doesn't look as pretty as, or it's salty or, you know, whatever it really is as compared to somebody else's version of what their, you know, what their life is and stuff. So is that like, do you get that sense from your customers and your fans and the followers and everybody that they're in here for a mission rather than necessarily, you know, blush?
Oh, absolutely. From the minute that first candle was posted online and people resonated with the shit show, right? And the bitches that get shit done, words hard. stuttering. But people really respond to that. And I get Facebook messages and I get Instagram messages and I get these heartfelt emails and from people sharing their stories and their experiences. And they know that they can come onto my webpage and or onto my social media sites, and it's going to be a place of inclusion where, you know, I try to personally answer back as many people as I can. Sometimes I get behind a week or two, but if somebody takes the time to share a story with me, you know, it is the right thing to do to acknowledge that trust, because that's somebody's story. And I think it's amazing that they trust enough to either, whether, you know, private message me or share it publicly, you know, on a post. I think people really, they want their Laura, and you know, and hopefully the Malicious Women environment provides them, you know, what we had, that safe space to say, I'm not doing great today. My kids, I gave everybody Pop-Tarts for dinner and called it a night. Like, and that's okay. Like, I don't tolerate any of that judgment and that shame, and you'll be deleted and banned before you know it, to try to keep it a safe space. So I think people really do respond because I really care. This has never been about money. I had an amazing job. I never, and now still, it's not about money. It's about the 17 men and women that work for me now, and providing them, you know, an amazing place to work, and that's family friendly and daycare friendly and shit show friendly, because right. And that's, I think that's what this is about, is just the connection. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah.
Yeah. Now you've, because you're started at such a, like a heart-centered place with the whole organization. And again, this is something that I can resonate with, because when I started my manufacturing business many years ago, it was important that it wasn't just the product, but it was the entire environment and the entire experience for, and I had mostly young men that worked for me. And it was everything about my values was integrated into everything that we did, including what we did, you know, when we weren't working and what the office was like and stuff like that. So in talking with you and learning and knowing more about you, this is a part of what your business is. It's taking this value and putting it through everything, not just products, but also the environment that you set up for your employees, and making mental health and suicide awareness like a very big part of your organization. Is that correct?
That is absolutely correct. Because health is bigger than just physical safety. I think a lot of manufacturing environments focus a lot on the, you know, OSHA requirements, right? I'm not going to drag an extension cord 50 feet across the shop, right? Safety to me is, health and safety is the whole body. So what we're doing to, you know, protect it ergonomically and, you know, make the job, the physical demands of that job easier, leaner, faster, all of those things, but then also that mental health aspect. I have a chair in my office. It's the crying chair. You get to come in and cry. Absolutely, right? Maybe, hopefully not if I'm with a vendor, because then that gets awkward. But but that spot is always there. And they do that for me too. They, you know, Samantha and Carrie, you know, even Sia and April, Casey, they've all been with me for so long that they can tell when I'm having an off day. And so that spirit of inclusiveness, that relationship that, you know, Laura and I had, or, you know, even my husband coming up to me on the couch and saying, honey, you need some help. That open dialogue is very important at the Malicious Women Co. We would not function well if we didn't. We go on retreats. We go and we have vacations together as a team, as a crew, because if we're not strong and if we're not united, then, you know, nothing. They are the most important piece of this business, right? Because if I didn't have this amazing team, we couldn't produce this amazing, the amazing candles and all the products to spread the message. You know, it starts at the core, and that's, I don't know, did that answer, I don't know if that answered the question or not.
No.
I guess I'm talking about my team. They're incredible. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, and it's a shift for businesses to try to think of doing something a little bit differently like that, you know, about integrating and understanding mental health into, you know, call it productivity as the engineers here in the room, but also just your well-being and your passion for why you show up every day. You know, some of the things that I've started to, you know, to talk about and address on the show is, you know, a lot of us are dealing with unpacking the childhood trauma backpack that we're carrying around and understand how much of it gets to come with us and what we can leave on the side of the road. And we do that on a daily basis, but it comes out at work, regardless of how mm-hmm. good or how we mm-hmm. apparently have our shit together. It shows up at mm-hmm. work.
It sure does.
Yeah.
It sure does.
Well, anyway, so with it, you know, how our mentalness shows up at work is really, you know, is an important part. And I think for, you know, and I would imagine right now, especially with this world, you know, that we've been changing, you know, for several months of not being open. And as a retailer, you know, that's had to have been hard for the last several months of being closed.
My gosh, what we did was incredible. This goes to talk about my team, right? So we got shut down. We had no notice. We're in quarantine. but we still had a business to run. So we spent the 2 days that we had notice, pulled everything from a 3,000 square foot manufacturing facility and turned my dining room, my office, my living room, and my garage into a mini candle factory. And every one of my team members set up labeling stations at their houses. So we did this like round robin thing where they would pour and then one, they pick up from the porch and then label and then pick up from the porch. And it would make its way back so that we could ship orders, because that's how much they care about this. You know, we tried everything to keep them off of unemployment, because what a shit show our Washington State unemployment was. So we were able to do that for the most part. And, but yeah, and I think part of creating that mental health environment is not just having a place to cry, but defining what that job role is. I think with a lot of people stress out and feel a lot of anxiety when their roles aren't truly defined and when there aren't processes in place. So really focusing on process driven, you know, quality driven, and with that mental health piece really helps people to feel really secure in what they're doing, and involving everybody in writing those processes. So it's kind of a dual approach. It's, you know, manufacturing, you know, ME type manufacturing engineering, QE, along with that mental health aspect, because you have to have both. Mm-hmm. You have to have both.
Yep, so. For sure. Now, you have a program where you still are obviously supporting suicide prevention and awareness. You want to talk a little bit about, you know, what kind of contributions you're doing for that, since it's such a big part of it's like the story, right? It's the underlying story.
Right. So I have an auto deduction on my website. I have two websites that deduct a portion of every single sale of each candle that gets donated to the National Suicide Prevention Foundation in Laura's name. Every single month, we direct deposit. It goes right through there. So of every candle, every product, everything that we sell, 10% goes directly there. And we have been able to make some amazing contributions. So we do that, and then we pick things. So like Hope for a Day is an organization that that funds suicide prevention and suicide education and awareness to teens. And so for $400 a class, you can sponsor 30 young adults to go through this training. So that's just $400. So we can, you know, make a couple of those donations. We support a lot of, you know, we get a lot of donation requests, and for the most part, I turn them down. The last 2 years we've been supporting a local chapter for Out of the Darkness. It's a nighttime suicide prevention and awareness walk that really, it's just beautiful to be a part of. People can go and honor their loved ones. And so that's important to us too. We also do a lot of, this donation requests, auctions, things like that. I do get a lot of donation requests, and most of them, you know, they don't really align with my brand. But for the ones that are really supporting mental health awareness, I don't know. I'm a sucker for a good cause. So I love it. I love writing checks.
You love writing checks. That's awesome.
It feels so good mm-hmm. when you get to do that. And maybe did I get cut off when I was talking about Hope for the Day and the 30 kids?
Is that I got that. Yep. I got that in there.
Okay.
Yep.
All right.
Yeah, well, we're good.
We're not having technical difficulties at all.
No, this is smooth.
You know, you know how cool that is to be able to send 30 kids and maybe just they can be a friend to someone who's struggling, or maybe help them out of the struggle. Like, oh, Laura, mm-hmm. be so proud. So, yeah.
It's pretty awesome. Well, this is, it's an amazing reason. And I, you know, I'm sorry that it had to start the way that it did. Right. You know, but I'm really grateful for you as a person. And I'm sure, like you just said, Laura would, I don't know her, but I got to imagine that you wouldn't be doing anything that you probably knew your best friend wouldn't just be in love with it, doing it in her name. Right. Yeah. And for somebody who sounds like with her kindness that she had for everybody else around there and her resiliency, you know, would she expect no less to see you get up and rise on, you know, doing something like this for her and with her still?
She is. Yeah. She's still here.
Yeah. For sure.
I think we're doing it together.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yep.
I think when I feel inspired, I'm like, oh, that's a Laura label. Mm. Yeah. So, and it's a whole team. It's a whole family effort. It's, you know, my family, my husband, my kids, everybody. Like, I think we all believe in, not I think, I know we all believe in this mission that we're doing. And it's just, yeah, it's amazing. So I don't know.
Well, I think, you know, the reason why I really did want to talk with you about this was because, you know, just like with everything that's going on right now, you know, not to date the episode, but, you know, this has been the summer of, you know, what's next, right? The Sahara Desert's coming to attack us now. So we're going into an episode of The Mummy. But it's just been, yeah, it's been one thing
zombies
after another.
Any minute.
Yeah. Right. And, you know, and when you and I cross paths and actually, you know, just a few weeks ago, activism and wanting to do something, anything to move a trajectory, to change something, to do something of positive and impact. It comes in so many different shapes, you know, colors and sizes here. And, you know, you don't have to all do the same thing. In fact, what's really great is that the more of us doing it in different ways and making it just the more commonplace. And so standing at a lecture and, you know, talking about mental health, doing a podcast and talking about mental health, or, you know, maybe every once in a while doing a flyer is one way, and it's an important way, but integrating it into the course of business, you know, is also in another way of doing it. And so for me, it is, you know, if your constitution isn't the type to go do it in one way, there is probably still some other contribution. And even the contribution is, you know, it could be as easy as where you spend your dollars. You know, are you spending your dollars with purpose, and are you spending them towards purpose? And when companies like yourself find themselves out here, I mean, I love it, you know, because it is this marriage of, you know, capitalism, which can work really beautifully. And when capitalism is harnessed and attached to a cause, then every time you are being successful economically, your cause is also being, you know, and that's what propelled me 20 years ago into entrepreneurship. And so sharing this is, like I said, I think it's important for somebody who's listening, who's like, I know that there's some meaning here for me. I can support something that I believe in. And because you turn around and you do make contributions back into organizations that are helping people that are, you know, that have the skills and the background to be able to do the training, and to be able to take the message and make it further and to grow it even more, I think is really important. And so, you know, kind of bringing this around, you know, why are we on a mental health podcast talking about a business? And it's like, well, because this is how these things can actually intersect in a really great way. And I think it's important to show all sides of the movement of destigmatizing mental health, of raising our awareness of suicide in our communities, understanding what it's like to lose somebody and live with it, and go on, what we can and can't do in the moment of it, what we can and can do after it, and how we can make it, you know, something that can turn into something beautiful and can have meaning and, you know, possibly even save other lives, you know, through our deeds and stuff like that. And so I appreciate you that what you're doing here. And it's been great to talk with you like this about this. And so thank you for all of that. And
I really appreciate you giving me the opportunity to tell my story and share, you know, why this is so important to me and my mission. So thank you very much. It's we need to talk about it. And I think the only way to remove that shame, that stigma, is to keep doing what you're doing. Keep doing your podcast, keep bringing, you know, people in to spread that awareness. And I'm really proud to be part of your mission. So thank you for including malicious women. And we can do this.
We got this. We're doing it. Yep. And so I want everybody, tell everybody where you can find all of your amazing stuff, because I'm certain there are people there that are going to now need to go out and get, a candle, either for their teacher or for themselves or, whatever. So where are you at?
So we are online. We are at maliciouswomenco.com, and we have expanded our product line. So what started with just candles, again, we have now launched into our trademarked Bitches Against Bullshit. And that is just, we're done. We're just fed up and we're going to announce it to the world. So we have our cosmetics line that that really celebrates the real reason women wear cosmetics. That took me 11 months of engineering. That was a fun thing, but so that's launched. We have jewelry, we have bath products, and of course, everything has a real meaning behind it, has a real message from the malicious women and why those products are. So it's maliciouswomenco.com. Some of our products can be found on Etsy, very limited selection, limited selections on Amazon if you need it like tomorrow. All of our products are, again, maliciouswomenco.com.
Cool. And the link will be in the podcast notes. And you also have some places you can find some stores, and I believe that link is on your website, right?
Yeah, we have stores all over the country carrying our products. So I think we're over 1,000 stores now on little main streets all across America. I refuse to go into big box stores. So it's the boutiques that get what we're doing. It's the boutiques that know our mission and that can spread our story. So those are there, but yeah, there's a link there. Of course, you can come see us personally in Snohomish, Washington on First Street. So, yeah. Yep,
absolutely. Cool.
And our social media, I'm on Instagram, Facebook. We have a private group that we post all like the real malicious stuff that you don't want your Aunt Betty seeing. So that's a private group that you can request access to. Follow us on social.
Cool. And again, all those links will be there for everybody that's listening, and you can check it out. And so Lacey, again, wow, it only took us an extra 20 to 30 minutes of all the shit show to get started.
How great we are at pivoting and adapting. Look at us adapting.
Right. Like, yeah, it is adapting. What? Mental flexibility.
Oh, that's good. I feel like that should go on a candle.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Infused with, opportunities for, I don't know. But anyway, I haven't had enough wine to come up with another label yet. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to One Broken Mom. You can find podcast notes on my website at amiquiracone.com, and there I'll provide all links to all of the resources that we mentioned on the episode. Also, if you have any questions, comments, or ideas for other episodes, feel free to send me an email. And if you are interested in sponsoring the show, I'd love to have you be a part of the team. Finally, if you like what you hear, please share the podcast and leave a review so that others can find it. We are all here to get better together. I am the host, Ami Quirconi, and as always, I am super grateful to have you as a listener. Until next time, have a great day.